the state decided to close the hunt for Mulchatna caribou. Can you talk a little bit about how the Department of Fish and Game came to that decision and why they came to it now?
Absolutely. So we've known about the population decline for a while now, but it took time for us to take further action. The first action we took was immediately we wanted to reduce the harvest limit so that we could reduce some of the pressure on the population and then also begin to troubleshoot some of the suspected problems, if at all possible.
And that happened in August?
Correct. We closed or reduced the limit in August after the hunt had already opened and after we had our official estimate for the population. We didn't feel it was appropriate to do anything beyond the one animal reduction because we felt it was really important to go through what's called public process. You know, bring in members of the community and get their perspective, their buy-in, their input before taking any further action. And for the state, that's super important because we operate under something called the public trust, which requires us to go through this process. And this is a hunt closure. These are decisions that we're making that can affect thousands of rural residents in western and southwest Alaska, not just the people coming in from Anchorage and other places throughout the state to hunt this herd. But there are people that rely on this population for their livelihoods. Before we made any sort of decision that could drastically affect them, we wanted to collect more information and talk to more people.
Okay, so Mulchatna caribou population is down at around 13,500 animals. What was the public input on the closure that the state received?
So for the most part, people were supportive once they knew about the status of Mulchatna. It was surprising to us and to a lot of people that even at the Nome Board of Game meeting, there were a lot of people that had no idea that any changes to this hunt had occurred, which is extremely surprising given the amount of information we feel we've put out there. Once people were brought up to speed, they were mostly supportive. But of course, we did have some opposition, and that's certainly expected, especially from communities that, again, really need this resource or only very rarely have access to it. And so it's an important opportunity to them.
What has that dialogue been like between the state and those communities?
So the dialogue has mostly been people will call us and be like, what's going on? What is this all about? When people trust us to manage this resource for them, to go from hearing that the herd is steady, it's doing well, to we are well below our objective is disconcerting. And so we appreciate that and we respect that.
So where is the department looking to go from here? Are there any plans to reach out and work with local communities in terms of management decisions or, you know, management in the coming months?
Absolutely. So one of the reasons we waited until the end of this month to close the hunt was we really felt it was necessary and important to come up with a solid plan, not just a biological plan for Mulchatna, but a plan to reach out to the public and continue to really hammer home this message of what's going on with Mulchatna and how they can be part of the solution. Before closing down the hunt, we determined that we needed more biological and harvest information to make sure we weren't just using a single point of information on the herd to make this decision. So in the last several months, we've been flying extra flights to understand adult survival. So that's survival of our animals that have radio collars. All of that information takes time to collect, which is why, again, we had those several months while the hunt was still open collecting this information to inform more on the biological side of what's going on. But then in terms of reaching out to the communities, we developed and are continuing to develop communication plans. We really felt it was important to provide an update and receive more input from the Board of Game, who serves as the regulatory body. This week, we've sent out postcards to all PO box holders regarding the closure of this hunt and some information and where they can go to look up more information. We have various technicians calling all of our tribal council offices and asking them to disseminate the same information. Moving forward, we are working not just out of the Dillingham office or even the regional office, but with the other two regions who are part of the Mulchatna's range. And they will be going ahead and also contacting various communities and going out and doing village visits that we will also be going out to do. And also they will be participating in some of the biological surveys as well.
We've talked before about how the cause and this recent rapid decline of the Mulchatna's population is not really known. Are there any indications of what could be contributing to the herd size?
At this point, no. It took a while to get to this point, and so it's going to take us a while to understand how we got to this point. We're spending over $1 million right now on caribou alone through research and management activities to understand what's happening. So different things we're looking at is, again, like I talked about, adult survival, but continuing our calf survival studies and looking more at movement and movement patterns, information that we haven't been collecting throughout the year in a while, we are now collecting once again. It's tricky because when things are in a state of decline, there's a lot of interest to conduct this sort of work. But when things are stable, you know, we kind of start getting lax, or the funding's not there for us to do this kind of work. So we're not monitoring throughout the year, which is unfortunate.
Thank you so much for coming into the studio. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me.
And as of this morning, 98 caribou were reported harvested. That's 35 females and 63 males. And Fish and Game isn't sure whether they're going to receive additional reports in the coming weeks. They also noted that hunters tend to report even after the deadline to report is passed.
Great. Well, 2020 will be a big year for Dillingham as a ton of projects are set to kick off starting in spring. City Manager Todd Larson moseyed on down to KDLG for another round of Manager's Corner to share some updates with the community and what to expect going into construction season. Alrighty, everybody, we are back with another edition of Manager's Corner. I'm Tyler Thompson. I'm sitting here with City Manager Todd Larson. Thanks for coming down, Todd.
Yeah, you bet, Tyler.
We've got some information on the Downtown Street project. Looks like JJC will be the construction company that'll be working on that.
Yeah, they're a local guy, local company. I was really happy to see that they got the three contracts here, low bidders on the state job and our water job and our paving job. So that was nice to see. So talking to Chris Meng, they're busy, getting everything ready and getting all the equipment, supplies on the first barge, and he's going to be ready to get going pretty soon. First thing, they're going to demolish that Dillingham Hotel. So once that starts going down, you can see that things are going to happen pretty quick then.
Yeah, I saw that was kind of the new thing from last time that we talked. So that's going to go down in the spring?
Yeah, that's the first thing he's going to do.
And so lagoon aeration project, I know we talked about this a little bit before, but it looks like request proposals are going to go out this spring?
Yeah, we're getting pretty close. My planner there, Cynthia, is still working on getting that project out for bid here. Just a reminder on that one, we did receive a $335,000 subsidy for this project, which is from the state of Alaska, which during the current climate is pretty great. So that is a significant help for that bill on that project.
Yeah, that's going to cover half of the cost of everything, correct?
Yeah.
So you're looking at a deadline or at least construction being completed by the end of the season by winter?
That's correct, yeah. We have to get that done before winter.
And then you have a PSA here about all the construction that's happening this summer and letting folks know that it's going to probably be pretty crazy.
Yeah, and again, we're just asking, just be patient, and Chris is going to work out a traffic plan for, obviously we got to make sure everybody can get to work and to store, et cetera, post office. So Chris is working hard on getting a traffic plan that will ensure that. But we just want to ask for people's patience. The outcome at the end will be wonderful. It'll be a great change in the city, and it'll have a whole different feel. I'm really, really excited about that.
It's looking like next month McDowell Group's going to be returning for another public meeting for the Waterfront Strategic Plan.
Yeah, we've been talking to them. We want them to do one more meeting here. We're trying to get some specific people to a public meeting. It looks like I think February 11th is going to be the date. We were just talking about that just before I came over here. So I don't have times or anything, but I'll make sure that you get them. But one of the areas we really need assistance in is when somebody comes to meet, if we can get some of the local fishermen to come down and talk to us and talk to the designers So we make sure that, you know, maybe get their thoughts and ideas in the plan. So if you're a fisherman out there, it would be great if you could come down and check it out and see what you think.
Next thing I wanted to talk about, some new revenues for the city, the online sales tax.
That was a court case, Supreme Court case with Wayfair in South Dakota summer before last. Basically, because you have these huge corporations like a Walmart or an Amazon or, you know, those they're selling online. You know, we all order some of the stuff online, but there's no sales tax associated with that that helps the city. But no, this anyway, bottom line with this is the online sales taxes. We put a resolution in. Alaska Municipal League is running a commission and will collect the sales tax for the city of Dillingham and remit it. So that will kind of replace some of our declining revenues in that area. So we're looking at about another 3 or 4 months before our ordinances will be ready, and then we'll be ready to join the group.
Great. So it'll go into the general fund that the city has?
Yeah.
Reserve? Okay.
Yeah. It'll go in the general fund, and it pays for, you know, basically all this, you know, all the projects we talked about and things like that. So, yeah, it'll definitely be put to good use.
Yeah, it'll be a nice boost. Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on with some of these projects that you would like people to know that maybe we didn't go over?
Oh, you know, nothing I can think of right now. I just wanted to come in and do a quick update, and we want to keep doing these things, and we'll probably do them more frequently coming this spring as things start changing, and everybody can tune in and listen to see what's the latest. But yeah, no, that's great. Thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Looks like everything's on track. Thanks, Todd. Yeah. Thanks for coming down.
So that's pretty encouraging coming from the city manager. Is the street downtown street project, like, is that on track also for this spring?
It's how it's looking. That's my biggest takeaway from our meeting is essentially everything is on track. So hopefully we will see some new roads coming into this winter.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Izzy. You can expect the first barge of materials for the hotel demolition next month, fingers crossed. We are also expecting another bond issue, the Fire Hall Edition, to go out for bid in a couple months. They just need to finalize some floor plans. And a big shout out to any and all fishermen. Please come out for the next waterfront meeting. Input was sorely lacking. McDowell Group tried to reach out to fishermen during the season, and that proved to be a bit of a struggle. So please, they want your input so they can finalize this draft and get things rolling on that end.
That sounds good. So we're going to turn now to some state issues. Earlier this month, Governor Mike Dunleavy announced that Dillingham resident is his newest pick for the state's Marijuana Control Board. Casey DeShack told me last week that he's excited to help and grow and regulate the new industry in the state. Since Alaska legalized recreational marijuana in 2014, the state has been working to regulate it. This spring, Casey DeShack will be one of the people charged with continuing those efforts.
I look at marijuana as it's a new industry. The lower 48's trying to figure out a way to regulate it. We're trying to figure out a way to regulate it. So every issue that comes up is new.
Alaska just approved the first licenses for on-site marijuana consumption last week. DeShack says he sees the marijuana industry as a business like any other, and that he would consider issues like on-site consumption on a case-by-case basis.
Whether or not we're doing on-site consumption or not, the distances from different buildings, some of those regulations could be posing problems to the industry as well. And so it's really a balance between society at large and the industry, but each instance would be unique.
The governor removed Mark Springer of Bethel, who previously filled the board's rural seat and was also the chairman. A critic of Dunleavy, Springer supports the recall effort. While on the board, he grappled with the question of on-site consumption for over 2 years, as he told KYUK last week.
Toking up was the big issue. The Lung Association, the Heart Association, the Cancer Society. They said, how are you going to do this? How are you going to protect employees from unintended inhalation of combustion products?
The board answered those concerns by developing a series of regulations, like requiring shops to have a ventilation system and a smoke-free area. Local governments also have the option to opt out of on-site consumption. DeShack says the financial burden should be shouldered by the industry.
You want to have the right regulations in place to where the property owners aren't paying for if there happened to be increased infrastructure that goes on, increased regulators hiring new people to assist in regulating the industry.
Heather Allen is a co-owner of Bristol Bay Buds, a pot shop that opened last spring in Dillingham. She says there's a lot of buzz surrounding Alaska's new rule allowing on-site consumption, and customers have been asking about it at the store. But she says for her shop right now, the numbers don't add up.
We don't have the space. The cost would be crazy, although wouldn't it be cool to have a weed lounge here?
Allen says she's excited to have a Bristol Bay resident on the board. The seat opens in March. If the legislature approves DeShack's appointment, his first meeting will be in April. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
And that was a story that I did earlier this week. And as you can hear, DeShack is excited to be on the board, and it really seems like he's trying to find a balance between supporting the marijuana industry and making sure that the cost of the industry growth and regulation doesn't fall on those not directly involved in the industry.
Huh. So DeShack is replacing Mark Springer of Bethel, an outspoken critic of Governor Dunleavy. Did politics play a role at all in Springer's removal?
Well, as I said, Springer has openly supported the effort to recall Governor Dunleavy. He also told Anchorage Daily News that he learned about his removal from the board from the Associated Press and not from the governor's office directly. Here's what he told KYUK about the broader situation.
The job of the board is to protect their health and to protect the public safety. The idea that any administration would be coming in and saying, well, you know, we think we can do better than the legislature intended, it just really bothers me.
The governor also reappointed Christopher Jaime to the 5-member board. Jaime holds the public safety seat.
Okay. Hey, Izzy, have you ever heard the census is going on?
What? The census? No. What is that?
Well, I talked to Marilyn Rosine and Dee Dee Bennis at the end of 2019. They are members of the Census Counting Committee here in Dillingham.
Okay, let's take a listen to that interview.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tyler Thompson. I'm here from KDLG. I'm joined by Dee Dee Bennis and Marilyn Rosine. Good morning. Thank you for joining me today.
Good morning.
So today we're going to be talking about the census.
We're here today and appointed by the City of Dillingham, representing Dillingham's Complete Count Committee as co-chairs for 2020 to develop awareness within our community.
And our job is to help people understand the importance of the census, which is taken every 10 years in our country. And we've been doing it every 10 years since 1790. And it's for statistical use. So we want everybody counted so that we know how many people are here, and that affects federal funding for many, many projects.
How does one go about filling out the census? How does the process work?
The surrounding villages in our region in Bristol Bay is going to start in late January and in early February. Dillingham is going to start off with our census takers dropping off the questionnaire in mid-March.
Once we receive those forms on our doors, there are three options. People may, for the first time, go online and fill out the census form. Basically, we're saying it's 10 questions, it'll take about 10 minutes, and the results last for about 10 years until the next census. So people can go online, and they can also call in and answer the questions over the phone, or they may fill out the form and mail it in. Those can all be done independently. Once those are sent in, then basically people are finished. If they choose not to or just don't get around to it, then later in April or May, then one of the census takers, or enumerators is the big word, will come to the home and ask if there's something that they can do to help fill out the form. And in the meantime, there are lots of resources for people to get answers to questions that they have. But one of the things that Dee Dee and I want to make sure people know about is to feel comfortable about the confidentiality of the responses that we give. Census takers take a lifelong oath to keep any information confidential. Quite frankly, those of us in Alaska who choose to apply for our PFDs, We give much more information to the state of Alaska on an annual basis, and the state uses that information. That's not the same as the census.
And through the partnership program and working with our tribes and the city and different entities in and around Dillingham, you'll be getting information about why the census is important. And it's important to note the data and the numbers that they're going to be collecting from the census that's going to happen. It's important for our school, our child care, roads or highways, our health care, all the social services, economic development and jobs and nonprofits. I mean, that's just to list a few of the things that are important and why we all need to be counted. Confidentiality is key. They keep this information secured for what, Marilyn?
72 years.
Yeah, and that's interesting because one of the first things I was concerned about was the confidentiality and the nature of the questions asked. We know the questions and why they're asking them, so information and having this knowledge is key to making sure that everybody in Dillingham and in Alaska and in our region get counted for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. One group that is underreported are children. And so we will be working with Head Start and the schools and families to make sure that each child is counted. A child now who is 4 will be 14 at the next census. There's a lot of life that happens in those years and a lot of important resources that we want available for those children. So we will be working with making sure that people are comfortable and clear with this.
There's so much information that you can get out there on the website. We got all our information from Alaska Counts for the 2000 census at www.alaskacounts.org.
Are there other ways to access this information, say if someone weren't able to use the internet?
That's a really good question, Tyler. We do have some forms with information that we will have at the public library available, and we do have public access to the internet at the library too. If you don't have a computer, the staff at the library will help you log on and get there.
Well, Dee Dee, Marilyn, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
The national count, of course, began 10 days ago in a community in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. We have a story from KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur, who traveled there before the census began to find out how people there were preparing.
The town is Tuksuk Bay, population 590 during the previous census. The man at the center of planning the town's next census introduces himself while peering over reading glasses.
My name's Robert Pitka. I'm the Nunatak Traditional Council Tribal Administrator.
Pitka has been in his job for a little over a year and a half. A lot of that time, he's been preparing for Tuksuk Bay to be town number one on the U.S. Census count come January 21st. It's a responsibility he never expected.
But the count will be very important, and it'll be special.
Pitka has been coordinating with the U.S. Census Bureau, helping find local census workers and interviewing with national journalists. There's a lot at stake. Each person counted represents potential government money the community could receive for services like public safety, housing, and infrastructure over the next decade.
It's not just for us today, it's for our future, and hoping that the benefits will come.
The town decided the first person in the nation to be counted will be their oldest, Lizzie Chimiwak. She's 89 years old, but often feels much younger.
Sometimes when my grandchildren are playing, I try to join them, and they laugh, and I come to and say, "Oh, I remember now, I'm old."
She doesn't look forward to the count. Her earliest memories of the census are of disease and loss. In 1940, after census workers arrived, many people in her village died of measles.
Children died, adults, mothers, lots of people died during the measles. I saw it happen.
She calls that time the Great Death and is wary of the census workers returning. The census day will begin with festivities in the Tuksuk Bay School. Students will welcome guests with yuok, traditional Yupik dancing and drumming. Census workers and journalists staying overnight will sleep in the school. It's the town's de facto hotel.
If people are willing to sleep on the floor with a sleeping bag, we're certainly willing to host them.
School principal Michael Robbins just has one requirement.
Be out of the classroom by 8 o'clock because that's, you know, we're still having school.
But he encourages the guests coming from cities across the country to hang out in the common areas and talk with the students about what they do and where they've been.
Like yourself or the Wall Street Journal reporter or NPR or AP, you know, that's kind of a neat thing for our kids to see something that's not ordinary in our village every day.
Down the hall, I ask a group of seniors a question. As the beginning of the census in Tuksuk Bay hits the news, what do you hope people learn about your community? The answer for all of them is the same.
Our cultures, we live off the land.
How we get food.
The way we dance. Yuga.
And our ancestors.
That was Jason Olson, Serena Simons, and John Tuluk. In Tuksuk Bay, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
And we would love to hear from people in Bristol Bay about their thoughts on the census. You can reach out to us at 907-842-2200. That is the newsroom. Or you can email us at news@kdlg.org.
Well, it's basketball season here in Bristol Bay. We had the Raven Invite here in Dillingham last weekend, and a bunch of teams are in Naknek this weekend. We have our guest sports commentator Kendra Kapotic in the studio to give us the rundown of how the high school basketball season is looking so far. Hey, Kendra.
Hey, Tyler. Yeah, so this last weekend we had the Raven Invite here in Dillingham. And we were able to bring in, you know, Sandpoint and Bristol Bay, and we had the JV teams in, and then Elegnagik. And we had Minto, which is a village like 2 hours out of Fairbanks, so that's quite a ways, and it was cool that they were able to come down.
Yeah, it was awesome to see them here.
Yeah, and just looking at this weekend, the girls went 3-0, so they had a pretty successful weekend, and the boys, I believe they went like 1-2. I could be wrong on that, but yeah, and like, looking at all the teams, they're all really young, you know, like there's only two seniors for the girls, and I don't think there's a senior on the boys team. And just like looking at the numbers and like the energy flow, it's crazy to see. And like, you know, Kylie Klaus, she's a freshman there, she's leading with rebounds, and we got Abby and Reagan there, just like double figures and like double doubles, you know, that's big things. And they're, I mean, each quarter they're ready to come in and play. And like, looking at all the other teams, Sandpoint was quite young, and their girls brought in, you know, quite a bit of points, and like, it's just really cool to see. I don't know.
Yeah, that's awesome. Going forward, what do you think your takeaways from the tournament? Looking at all the different teams, who are some of the standouts to you?
Definitely our girls, and Bristol Bay is also in our region, and just looking, you know, further on and into the regional tournament, it's pretty exciting, you know. The girls are 11-2, you know, they're looking forward to playing Unalakleet. Tigiagik is a big team there, and so is Onalaska, and both teams are, you know, looking to get that next game in and get playing time in to get prepared for, you know, those big games. And I think they're getting there, you know, like they're getting prepared. They're fixing the mistakes.
Yeah, they're working on it. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Anything that for the Dillingham team, strong points and maybe some areas that they might need to work on?
Fixing those little mistakes and like being ready to adjust to like those bigger teams, because they're going out to these little villages and they're playing these other teams, but they're not quite in their region. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to look forward, but they're gunning, you know, they're ready to play.
Great. Well, closing out the season, any more thoughts that you have looking forward to the end of the year?
Waiting for that regional game to like see where they're at. You know, they have a pretty good record, just not on the girls' side, but the boys' side too, looking to get that regional title, you know.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Kendra.
And wait, can I just jump in here? So you mentioned when you were doing commentary over the weekend, over mm-hmm. the Raven Invite,
you talked to Kylie Klaus, and she mentioned, you know, Unalakleet and Unalaska. What were some of her apprehensions with Unalaska? Why was she nervous about that?
Just because they don't usually see them until the regional tournament, so it's kind of hard to gauge, like, okay, how is this game going to go, you know? Like, what do we need to come prepared with? And it's not just, like, Unalaska, too, but, like, Unalakleet, they had a pretty, like, I played last year and we had a pretty hard time with Unalakleet and we lost to them at regions, and that's how we, you know, we lost our game and we couldn't go to state. And, you know, I think they're just really excited to have that comeback. And, like, she was already talking about how they were excited to play them again and, yeah, just get that opportunity to show their place.
Great. Well, Kendra, again, thank you so much for sharing with us. We're looking forward to talking more sports with you.
Yeah, for sure.
And that just about does it for the show today. We're going to take a look at the weather. It's pretty cold outside, but the temperatures will warm up significantly this
weekend.
Heat
wave.
There will be a heat wave. Highs on Sunday are going to be in the mid-30s, and with that, we're going to see some snowfall. And early next week, it looks like we could see some accumulation as well. It's currently negative 4 degrees in Dillingham. Calm around town today, some sunny skies. Highs today, negative 5 to negative 10 degrees, northwest wind at 15 miles per hour. And tonight we're going to see clear skies with lows ranging from negative 20 to negative 25 degrees. So really cold tonight in Dillingham, so do be safe and careful if you're venturing outside this evening. Northwest wind at 15 miles per hour tonight. We're going to take a look at some community announcements as well. Dillingham City Schools is holding the last few parent-teacher conferences. They continue until 2 p.m. today. And there is a deadline for personal business and property assessment returns in Dillingham. The form is due, postmarked, on or before February 1st. And that is for a total combined value of assets of $10,000 or less. If it's $10,000 or less, there is no filing requirement. However, a return form must be filed annually if your boat, skiff, or vessel is used for commercial purposes, no matter how much it's worth. For more information on that, you can contact the Dillingham Finance Department at 842-5225. Forms can be downloaded at dillinghamak.us. And I think that just about does it, right, Tyler?
Yeah, that's going to wrap us up for today. You can listen to local news every day at 7:04 a.m. and 8:19, and also at noon. Or visit us online at kdlg.org. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, give us a call at 907-842-2200, or again, email us at news@kdlg.org.
And I just do want to say we are trying to find names for the show. If you have any suggestions for what to name it, we have some, you know, thoughts out there. We're kind of workshopping it. So we've got Bristol Bay Jamboree. Not sure how we feel about that one yet.
The Bristol Bay Bonanza. You know, we've been ping-ponging some things, so we would love to hear from people around the area.
Absolutely. So you can email us your suggestions at news@kdlg.org. You can also find us on Facebook and message us there. I'm Izzy Ross.
And I'm Tyler Thompson.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Stay safe, stay warm, and tune in next week.